Excuse me, but is this thing on?
Welcome to the New York Times Podcast, your POPOPOCAST of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
On a Monday, I am waiting. Tuesday, I am fading. And by Wednesday, I can't sleep. Then the phone rings, I hear you. And the darkness is a clear view. Cause you've come to rescue me.
That one take,
let's,
John?
Let's not talk about how many takes that took.
Four take Caramonica here with the heat, the long-awaited heat. We have been promising you coyly, and I would venture to say cruelly, we have been promising you an Ashley Simpson podcast for as long, probably as long as it's been since Ashley Simpson has put out a music of any kind. And here we are, finally, in March 2018. We're delivering. Karen Gans is here.
John, I got bruises in my heart.
I know you do.
Sometimes I get dark.
This is really a Gans cast when you think about it. We'll get to that. Joe Coscarelli is here.
Mm-hmm. Pete Wentz expert.
We have to have one. I'm going to be the Cabrera file. Karen, how's your Evan Ross?
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah.
Not good enough.
Not good enough. Okay. We'll come around to it. That's late Ashley.
Yeah. The current, boyfriends yes. come later.
Yeah. So yeah. I want to say right up front, this is going to be a two-part podcast because the people demanded it. This is the people's podcast. This is we spoken into the world, but the people spoken into existence.
This is a threaded tweet of podcasts.
It really is. So two-part podcast. This week, we are going to be discussing primarily the music of Ashley Simpson, which spans three albums and a few Lucys and a couple of ill-advised live performances. Mm-hmm. That is what we're going to focus on this week. Next week, we're going to focus on the Ashley Simpson show, the MTV reality show, as well as listener mailbag. We have a bunch of questions that we've been soliciting over the last few weeks. If you have more, please send some more to podcast@nytimes.com.
And part three is when Ashley Simpson comes here and hurts us.
Yes, that's true. Emotionally.
Or hugs us.
Yeah, emotionally.
I mean, I'm open to either one.
Yes.
What I want new is podcast host someone is to Simpson. Please track the chart position.
The Spotify streams?
If Ashley Simpson yeah. streams spike at all next week, I want to be alerted.
Yeah, who knows who's going to have that data? Do we have any listeners in deep data at Spotify?
Yeah, we'll see. I'll keep an eye.
Please,
I'm going to try.
Yeah, hit our DMs. Hit the email address. We'd like to know about.
I'm not saying that our influence is huge. I'm just saying that a few more people are going to listen to Ashley Simpson in the coming
days. Royalty
days.
Checks are going to be 46 cents. Going to
take a little bounce.
13 cents.
Exactly.
You're welcome. your man Mark Ribot out here complaining about Spotify
say,
jazz payments.
I thought we've already
sure,
done
Ashley,
this.
Ashley Simpson's
cast.
Probably complaining about her Spotify payments too. Although I know, Karen, you stay playing Ashley Simpson on Spotify on the reg, so she's definitely getting a check off that.
Constantly.
Okay. More on Karen Gans's intense relationship with Ashley Simpson, the oof of Ashley Simpson, later in the podcast. Let's start with Autobiography. Autobiography is the debut album of Ashley Simpson. It's released in 2004. And the two words I want to focus on, we don't have to start with them, but that I want to focus on are Cara DioGuardi. Shouts to Cara DioGuardi, who I interviewed when she was the new judge and then the old judge on American Idol.
The timing is pretty ripe for this with Idol returning next week.
Wow, it's true.
News peg.
On brand.
Mm-hmm. I'll say off rip that she is to Ashley Simpson in her early career, mm-hmm. what our pal Liz Rose is to Taylor Swift.
True story.
Songwriter, mm-hmm. behind the scenes, storied career, undersung
yeah,
hero.
Never quite got like the Linda Perry boost.
Right.
Like in the mainstream understanding. Right. I mean, I felt like even when I interviewed her, whenever that was in 2010, I think, or 2009, I don't know if there had been a great Cara DioGuardi profile from the mid-2000s when...
With,
when
like, Songwriter magazine or something.
Maybe. But, like, she was writing... She wrote for Pink. She wrote for Paris Hilton.
Hillary Duff. McPhee. Ashley Tisdale. Oh, stars of the era.
Oh my God, I came with the notes. Yo, Joe, got a micro
The Cobra Starship... Single Good Girls Go Bad featuring Leighton Meester.
Oh, yes. Oh!
We'll play a little.
Let's play it.
Yeah.
Because I know that's a banger.
Let's hear that right now.
I know that's a banger. I make them good girls go bad.
Little girl, just take a bite. Let me shake up your world. Cause just one night couldn't be so wrong. I'm gonna make you lose control. She was so shy till I drove her wild. I'll make them good girls go bad. I'll make them good girls go
Lindsay Lohan, Gwen Stefani.
Oh,
she's just making hits for
this
all of these mid-aughts
so
stars.
Intense. We should, but just to set the scene, please. This was just before the Britney breakdown.
Yes.
Of like 2006, 2007.
Thank you, Karen, for your scholarship.
Yeah, I just want to bring you
thank
back.
Thank you. Where is pop in 2004?
It's in an in-between stage between Britney, the Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, Turn of the Century,
TRL,
Christina.
TRL.
Yeah, TRL
Pink,
pop.
Yes.
Eminem.
And then... At the same time, we've got the rise of Fall Out Boy, Newfound Glory, emo, pop punk is getting very popular.
Good Charlotte, Avril Lavigne.
Yes. And there's this weird era where they start mingling before it turns to complete celebrity culture, Us Weekly cover with Paris Hilton, you know, Nicole Richie and Britney, that kind of stuff.
And it's funny, there's actually some interesting parallels, I think, between that moment and this moment. Because we're now in a moment where anyone who's like moderately Instagram famous thinks that they can be a rapper, thinks it'd be and the institutions are basically there to support those people.
Yes.
This was like the slightly smaller but also more glamorous version of that, which is if you were an actress or reality star. There were songwriters who would work with you who were legitimate songwriters, and there were labels that would sign you.
I was going to say, these are major label people. I mean, like, Ashley was signed to Geffen and had, like, a pretty significant push.
And sold millions of
records. It was the monoculture version of what's happening now on social media, which is more fragmented.
Exactly. So Autobiography is a jam. Let's just say the title track. No, the whole thing.
The whole thing.
Whole album's jam.
Yes.
It's pretty
everything.
Good.
It knocks. It slaps. Everything
it holds
you
holds up. It still sounds good.
There's maybe two like medium songs on there, but basically the album is at the time, I think the read on the album, the critique of the album was it is somehow a fifth generation Xerox of whether it was pop punk or a slightly more, if you can say, a slightly more authentic young female pop that we had just come out of. That's the reason. It's like Ashley Simpson, who is she to do this? And yet, it still ends up being very much emblematic of the time.
Well, who was she? The album is called Autobiography.
Damn
I think
right.
We know why she became famous in the first place.
Let's talk about Jessica.
But first, I want to read you guys the first line from John Perellis's 2004 review.
Oh my
of
God,
Autobiography.
You don't work. Bring it.
This is really good.
John, we miss you. He said, there is some actual talent as well as show business ambition in the Simpson family.
Does he say who has which?
You know, honestly, I think he's saying that
Ashley had the cred.
He goes on to compare the production to U2. So,
well, you know
what?
All three of these albums are unbelievably, impeccably produced.
Yes.
And the playing on them is amazing. I think, you know, knowing John as we do, he knows what's going on in the world, tabloid-wise. But, you know, he really listens to each album and evaluates it on its own merits.
The album was produced by John Shanks, the first album.
Yes.
And he had worked with like Sheryl Crow and Alanis Morissette. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of
that.
A little bit of that left over.
Oh, in here.
Also Michelle Branch, I think early Michelle Branch. Yeah. Like I don't know if he worked on it, but that vibe
good,
was
that
in the ether.
Good crunchy Branch.
Yes, exactly.
It's important. So we should put Ashley in the Simpson family context, right? So Jessica Simpson is a rather emotionally benign but pretty vocally gifted pop R&B singer.
That's who, generous.
You don't think she had a good voice? I think she had like a good kind of like, basically like a good white church voice.
Yeah, okay, all right. All
sure.
Right.
Like, you know.
They're from Texas.
Yeah, I think, yeah. I mean, I feel like something we've never talked about on a podcast before is basically like what the Grammys categorize as like Southern gospel, which is basically white gospel. Yeah. She's basically, in my mind, like a Southern gospel singer, which, of course, anyone who listens to actual gospel music knows is, like, not actual gospel music.
Yep.
It's, like, a kind of, like, mega, almost like mega church praise pop. I think she has a voice that's pretty well suited to that.
But then they tried to put her in the Britney Spears box.
Yes. Like, basically, her father, Joe Simpson, we do a whole, my God.
Dad, extraordinaire.
Like, a 10-part, yeah. Who's doing the 10-part docuseries?
Honestly,
on
the original Kris Jenner. In a lot of ways.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. So he really helped to remake Jessica as a pop singer, at least an attempted pop singer, and then took them very quickly to reality television. And this is really 1.0 era of MTV reality. This is maybe just after the Osbournes.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the Newlywed Show, which is Nick Lachey and Jessica Simpson.
Very famous for Jessica not knowing that tuna fish is not chicken.
Right.
Chicken of the sea.
Yeah. The sea.
And various other intellectual foibles.
Yes, challenges, yeah.
So Ashley is the younger sister of the two, and Ashley is not the same kind of singer or personality, or at least was not presented as such.
Mm-hmm.
So Ashley is like mildly rebellious, a little bit punk, basically trying hard to be anything that Jessica is not.
Right, the black sheep.
Yes.
To some extent. But in looking back, it was actually interesting to see that Jessica Simpson's music career didn't really take off until Newlyweds. So she was sort of and also ran to not only Britney, but also Christina and Mandy Moore. And she was
there was a lot of competition.
She was like fourth tier at a certain point. And it wasn't until, I guess, her 2003 album, which rode the back of the first season of Newlyweds, when she first started really selling records.
Can we listen to a Jessica Simpson song?
Yeah, what's the
I'm just scrolling through Spotify.
Poor Ashley Simpson. No, it's like 2 minutes in and we're listening to a Jessica Simpson song.
But also I'm just scrolling through Spotify and like one of the things right under Rejoice, R-E-J-O-Y-C-E, the Christmas album, says Jessica Simpson in parentheses for 7-Eleven, just to let you know it was really popping off in 2004. So let's listen to something. This is off of, I'm pretty sure it's the second Jessica Simpson record. It's called Irresistible. It's the title track. It is a genie out of the bottle.
You know, I don't know what it is, but everything about you is so irresistible. Tell me that it's not my type to hide away.
So anyway, into this universe arrives Ashley Simpson. And I think Joe Simpson very, very early on says, I got to do something different. Probably because Ashley can't do what Jessica does vocally, but also maybe isn't cut out to do what Jessica's doing personality-wise. And also she's much younger. So Autobiography is a pretty spectacularly, carefully constructed teen pop punk rebellion record, but it's definitely by numbers, but it's very, very well done, I think.
Oh, I agree. But what we have here is she's got like a raspier voice than Jessica, one could say singing is not her forte, but she...
Cracks are her forte.
The voice cracks are great.
Absolutely. They're authentic. Those are 100% real.
A very specific skill where she can drop the pitch of a note at the end of a phrase and in a specifically right / wrong way. The vibe is
You mean wrong / right.
Yeah.
Yes. Sorry.
That's okay. Just while we're clarifying.
You can clarify it. You know, lots of crunchy guitars in the mode of, you know, early emo. I mean, should we just listen to a couple of the songs?
Yeah. I feel like just for this moment in the conversation, I'd like to listen to Shadow.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Because
that's about Jessica.
That's about the family. That's about basically being forced into a box and trying to get out of the box, even though the box that you're being forced into, you're also being forced into. It's just a different box.
It's a different box.
Living
it's not
in
the
shadow.
Box that's already full.
Yeah, it's just a different box.
Of someone else's dream.
Right, but a box.
A close reading.
Let's listen to some of Shadow, which is one of my favorite songs on the record.
I was then in the shadow of someone else's dream. Trying to find a hand to hold, but my touch felt cold to me.
Shadow to me is maybe not the most musically successful song, but it reminded me when I interviewed Cara DioGuardi, I remember talking to her about her songwriting process.
This is a drinking game, by the way.
It is.
When we say Cara DioGuardi? Yes. Okay, go on.
So every time I asked her about her songwriting process for working with that particular group of young, unformed, teen pop arrivists, basically.
Sort of actresses.
Yeah, sort of.
Ashley was on Seventh Heaven, remember?
She was. To be honest, I had not watched any of that arc, so I don't know. Have you guys seen that arc?
Not recently.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was there.
But it was a lot of, and it's not that different from other songwriters, but it's a lot of extracting stories and then turning them into something melodic. And Shadow, to me, seems like extremely emblematic of, I believe 100% the content is Ashley Simpson.
They had a great talk about what it's like to be the little sister of a famous person.
And I believe 100% the melody and lyrical structure is Cara DioGuardi.
Well, if you watched, I know we're going to talk about the reality show more in episode 2, but if you watch the first episode of the first season, she's attempting to write the album with two songwriters, one of which was a member of Sugar Ray, and they have her sort of toting around a notebook and hanging out with them on scenic LA mountaintops while she's struggling to put this relationship with this guy named Josh into
Josh.
Words.
Josh, Mr. Abercrombie and Fitch.
Yeah, Josh.
Josh.
Josh, who lasts all of like 21 minutes.
Although to be fair, I'm not totally caught up on the show, but I will say it's likely that everyone after Josh loved her for the wrong reasons.
Wow.
I'm talking about you, Ryan.
I'm not sure Josh loved her for the right reasons.
Okay.
Keep in mind, she's 19 at this point. She has no songwriting experience.
Freshly moved into her first apartment.
Yeah. And she keeps talking about how Jessica told her that making an album is really, really, really hard. But it's hard to understand what about it that she thinks is hard. Do you know what I mean?
And what seemed to be the narrative around the whole creation of the album, which again is covered pretty extensively in the show, which is basically a documentary of the making of Autobiography, is not only that she doesn't want to be Jessica Simpson, but that she doesn't want to be any of the other girls
available.
Who aren't Jessica Simpson.
Right.
She doesn't want to be Hillary Duff. That name comes up a lot. Her label is constantly telling her, you know, we need edgier songs. We need more Hillary Duff.
Which is fire.
Which is just an amazing...
Fire. And I'm a huge Hillary Duff fan from this time
period.
Who
was Duff dating at that period? Because she was dating somebody in that pop punk scene, wasn't she?
A Good Charlotte guy? I can't remember.
I feel like it was something
like that. Was she dating Joel Madden?
Let's
Google it. Let's Google it. Yeah. What's the website that has the timeline of
I'm
celebrity
I'm literally typing Hillary Duff dating history and ending up on some crazy FBI list.
It's been nice knowing you, Joe.
Joel Madden, 2004 yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. to 2006.
There you go.
So I Joel think Madden. That
according to whosdatedwho.com.
I think pretty reliable as these things go.
So they were lending. So the Maddens were really successful at that time. They were mm-hmm. the youngest band on the cover of Rolling Stone. Cover story by Christian Horde. Shout out, Christian.
Whoa, detail. You come to Popcast for the detail.
And they co-wrote the bonus track from Autobiography, which is called Harder Every Day.
Yes, but I think that might have just been Benji Madden. So she didn't take the Madden that was dating Hillary Duff.
But it's too close.
That's strategic.
It's too close.
Yeah. But it's interesting to me that even though she was a new artist, obviously she came from a showbiz family and was very entrenched in, you know, the politics of music at the time. But it was all about how to position her, where in the marketplace mm-hmm. she would fit. And
I'm surprised, but there are two words we haven't said that actually really matter.
Avril Lavigne.
Avril Lavigne.
Yes. Yeah.
We have not said the word
Skater
Avril
Boy.
Lavigne. Oh my God. Okay. So
okay. Wait. Hang on. Can we listen to Skater Boy for 1 second?
Yeah. Let's all listen right. to Skater Boy. It's hard to overstate how radical Skater Boy felt in the moment, even though it too was a complete product of the major label system. I remember very clearly in a Britney Christina universe, when Skater Boy came out, it was like Fugazi. Like it literally felt, I mean, I remember the promo for the press promo for Avril's first album. They literally sent out a mock journal of her handwritten, scrawled, like a black and white notebook, a composition notebook or something. And it's basically hand-scrawled lyrics to let you know she's not like these other girls.
Mm-hmm.
And well, she did go on to have a career as a songwriter.
And she's also she's a hell of a singer.
She's great. Well, but people really hated on that record, the Liz Phair record that she worked on. I thought that record was amazing.
Shouts to Karen.
Is that Nobody's Miracle?
Yeah. No, I definitely did not listen to that.
Oh, that's a great record.
Okay, I mean, I'll get into
the
that.
The core of what, you know, of Avril's songwriting is exactly sort of what the best parts of Autobiography are. It's extremely tuneful, really, really catchy, but
Nickelback.
not pop on the you know, the dancey pop edge of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Chad Kroeger.
I mean, but also similar to what one of Derek your Woodley. Faves, Kelly Clarkson, was doing at
the
time, who also worked with Cara DioGuardi, Drink.
Yep.
On I Do Not Hook Up.
Take a Bow,
which is an underrated Kelly Clarkson song.
Yeah.
But I think the Ashley sound. I feel like the Ashley sound.
I'm so tempted, but I'm trying
even
not to.
More than Skater Boy.
Poor Joe.
Comes from Complicated, which was the first big Avril Lavigne mm-hmm. single.
Yep.
And it sort of split the difference between.
Was
like,
it first?
I believe so.
I think Skater Boy came first.
Really?
I think Skater Boy might have come first, but Complicated, I think, got
no,
bigger.
No, the debut single, Complicated.
Really?
Oh.
Yeah, produced by The Matrix.
Shout to The Matrix.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But that song was basically like somewhere between Alanis and Good Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear that right off the bat with Autobiography. And the other thing you get in it is the crazy mid-2000s California-inflected pronunciation, the vocal fry of that era.
Mm-hmm.
There's a specific line in Autobiography where she says,
I can't wait for this.
Where she says, I'm solo now, but that will be
changing
eventually. I think, let's just play a little of the title track.
Right now I'm solo, but that will be changing eventually.
Yes, but just the way that she gets those words out, it really puts it in a specific time mm-hmm. and place.
You think you know me? Word on the street is that you do. You are my history. What others tell you won't be true. I walked 1,000 miles when I
I mean, I would say the way she gets any words out is kind of a miracle. Everything just sounds like it's like about to go off the edge.
When I was listening to Lala, it's interesting how she can be trying to sound serrated and scraped, but still sound so clean.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear that kind of performance of Edge without any actual depth to the edge. And that's something I think recurs throughout, both sonically, but also lyrically.
Mm.
And that's like, if there's a weakness to this, it's that all of the things that are trying to be tough are clearly sort of like soft batch stuff.
Mm.
Like I buy Pieces of Me, I buy Shadow, I buy Better Off. Like I buy songs like that, but like—
You don't buy Lala?
I buy it as kind of like a full body experience, as like
there's
a
lot
like
of squealing and grunting and and sound effects in Lala.
We should talk about Lala because Lala was a single, right?
Kitchen on the floor.
But it's really, I mean,
why are you singing them all? I said I was going to. This is cheating.
The lyrics are quite explicit.
Yeah,
there's a line at the beginning when she says, "You can throw me like a lineman. I like it better when it hurts."
Is that like Rihanna singing about the 69 Jets? Or like, it's like, it's kind of like, it showed up on a piece of paper.
Right.
I'm not but I would keep in that mind that she was 19 at the time.
Yes. You know, drink the milk up.
I want
you
know,
an alley cat. I'm an alley cat drinking the milk.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's very cupcake.
Very cupcake. Do you think Cupcake was influenced by Ashley Simpson?
We'll have to ask her.
Cupcake, please wow. This gets to you somehow. Let us know.
Yeah. Hit the podcast at mytimes.com. Let us know to what degree you're—
But Lala really, I think it was like, it was her saying, like, I'm really trying to be edgy. Like, I know this is pop music, but like, it's basically a whole song. It's a Courtney Love.
I totally agree.
With an absolutely killer bridge. You make me wanna lie. Unbelievable bridges on Ashley Simpson songs, just like Kelly Clarkson
Karen,
songs.
As a guitar virtuoso,
yeah.
Can you talk to us about the actual playing of guitar on this record?
It's really good.
Let's hear about it.
It actually is a little bit better on the second album. Oh. So I might hold back.
Damn.
I might hold back.
Excuse you, whoever was playing guitar on the first record.
Because
it's over for you. You're canceled.
But the lead single from the second record, I believe, is Boyfriend, which comes with that riff.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
Which is like a little more prominent. Like the guitar is more just sort of background crunchy, you
right.
know.
Okay, we'll
stuff
say it.
There's less lead guitar
Hold
on this
it.
Record. Okay.
Hold it.
I'm holding it.
Okay, so I want to play a little bit of Unreachable from this first album, and I want you to tell me what you hear.
Just like I'm you're gonna make me fly.
Joe, I see your eyes lighting up. Karen, I see you chomping at the bit. Tell me what you guys hear.
John, we've been a bad, bad girl.
You're damn right.
Yeah.
I was so...
That pure, uncut Fiona.
Oh my God. I was so struck. Now, again, this is way before... songwriters were suing people. Yeah, this is like a long, like right now, Fiona could get a check off
I'd
this.
Say 2004 right now feels like 1972.
It really does.
So far away.
So when I listened to this, I was so confused because I could have sworn that my Spotify just started playing the wrong album.
Yeah, yeah.
But then the vocal entered.
Yes. But it is a brute force rip of Fiona Apple's Criminal, which I think tells you almost everything you need to know about the positioning of this record.
Right.
What the reference points are.
And it was exactly
rebellious. The rebellious women of 1990s pop, post Riot Girl, post female indie rock of the early to mid 90s. It's everything that trickles into pop after that, sanitized, tightened, cleaned up.
And it was the perfect timing to do it again because Tidal came out in like 96. Right?
Is that right? 97? Yeah. I was just saying 97.
So, like, you know, it was like you're coming up on a decade since Fiona sort of came in like a meteor, you know, and obviously she took her career in a different direction, thankfully, for her mental health and longevity and the records that would come. But, you know, I think it was the record industry knew that they could go back to that well.
And to that point, one more thing I want to play for you guys. Tell me what you hear.
I found myself wrong again, staring out my window, wondering what it is I should have said. I found myself at home again, waiting for the after call from a fallout that feels like such a mess.
So that was Nothing New,
a.k.a. by Alanis Morissette.
a.k.a. Alanis Core. So this is peak 1998 Canadian pop rock, refiltered for 2004.
With sharper bangs.
Yeah. Great bangs. Great bangs. Wow. We should have a whole segment of this on the bangs. We didn't even think about the style angles. So again, if you're triangulating this Ashley Simpson album, the sort of your alphas, your omegas, your whatnots, obviously you have Avril. But really, you have Fiona, you have Alanis, and you have anything that would make you run far, far, far away from Britney and Christina.
I'm thinking now of the Pieces of Me music video when she's she's in the studio, I'm doing air quotes, cutting the vocals, and she's wearing a wife beater that says punk on it in pink, like
fire.
Old English lettering.
Fuego.
Just punk. Yeah, I'll take one of those. Etsy.com.
Was
Forever 21 even in business then?
I don't know, but Hot Topic definitely was in
business. Forever 11 at that point. Nice. No, it's definitely, it feels like a Hot Topic classic.
Yeah.
And this whole album is like a Hot Topic classic. Yes. I don't even know if Hot Topic at the time knew that this was a Hot Topic.
No, I think Hot Topic would have been too angsty for this at the time. It would have rejected it on its face, but it was perfect.
Yes. I mean, it's because Hot Topic at that time is basically like sort of like Marilyn Manson t-shirts, kind of. Mm-hmm. Right. But it basically, what Hot Topic eventually became, especially in this moment, is the pop compression of these kind of dark, outsider eccentric ideas into a more glossy or bigger package. Ashley, early.
She was early.
Early in the game. Early in the game.
I just checked while you guys were chatting about what year I Kissed a Girl came out.
Mm-hmm.
Not realizing.
You're about to blow our minds.
2008.
Oh, yeah.
That, the year that Ashley concluded releasing albums.
But so...
So basically what you're saying is that Katy Perry vampirically sucked the soul from Ashley Simpson and then carried it into the 2010s?
No, but okay, maybe. But,
an idea.
When you were talking earlier about the bands that they were sort of like flirting with and you know, your Good Charlotte's, whatever, don't forget that during that period, that's when Katy Perry was dating Travie McCoy.
Wow.
And she was on the Warped Tour.
Wow.
Oh!
It all comes
together. I'm calling it now. Next special podcast. Unheralded influential couples that didn't make it, but who ended up being crazy important, starting with Katy Perry and Travie McCoy.
Wow. And Travie, of course, signed to Pete Wentz's label. Pete Wentz married and has a child with Ashley Simpson.
Yes. Bronx.
Brought us Tyga.
There's a
Travis McCoy's cousin.
Yes.
This is an Us Weekly chart. Which leads just us waiting to
directly into also, the Kardashians.
I did the Vibe Next piece on Gym Class Heroes. And just to let you know what was happening in 2007, I guess, when this was, that seemed like a lot. Like, that was, I had to sell people on why that mattered. Yeah. And I was like, no, you don't understand. This is where the music
Well, maybe going. You can answer this question for me because it doesn't. It's not retained in my 16-year-old mind. Mm-hmm. What's the Gym Class Heroes song where it's all just the name of indie bands?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know, but I want
I think
it.
Google's going to have to answer
he does,
that.
He does a rap where he's like stringing together phrases that are like My Chemical Romance, Death Cab for Cutie. It's a real accomplishment.
Is Earth Crisis in there? I definitely remember we talked a lot about Earth Crisis.
I don't think Earth Crisis
I think
made
I,
might, that
I don't
one.
Know if Earth Crisis made the final cut of that piece.
I took Cutie for a ride in my Death Cab. She tipped me with a kiss, I dropped her off at the meth lab. Before she left, she made a dashboard confessional. Let's spill the guts in cursive. But what's worse is I can still see her bright eyes like sunny days.
There's an elephant in the room.
Is there?
The lead up to,
so dramatic.
To autobiography.
Yeah.
There was something else that happened to Ashley Simpson's career in this period when this album came out.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was now.
Oh, speak on it.
Oh, yeah.
Speak
yeah.
on it, or better. Don't.
Once again, Ashley Simpson.
On a Monday, I am waiting. Tuesday, I'm there.
Wow. So October 23rd, 2004.
A day that will live in infamy.
A Saturday night.
The D-Day number two.
Yeah. So this is when Ashley Simpson, big showcase on SNL. She's here to perform her hit single, Pieces of Me. Goes off without a hitch, her first song.
Which, to be fair, I cannot find footage of that.
No, but if there's footage of that, please send it to the podcast.
Seriously, podcastnymytimes.com. I looked for a long time.
For the performance of Pieces of Me.
For the actual successful SNL performance.
So then she comes back to play her second song, Autobiography, the title track from her very successful album. This album debuted at number one on the Billboard chart, went on to sell more than 3 million copies. This is a smash. She's getting ready to do what she wanted to be the next single. And the band's about to get going, and all of a sudden, you hear Pieces of Me.
Again. And not just, and mind you, not just the guitar part of Pieces of Me.
No, it's the vocals.
It's the vocals. You hear at least two lines, maybe three. And then I'm doing it here in the room.
Yeah, Ashley freezes, or not quite freezes.
So she does a little jig.
She does a little kind of country hoedown kind of thing.
She looks at her drummer in disbelief.
Everybody.
Who later is forced to take the blame because he was the person who was triggering
the backing track.
Oh, is that what happened? Okay.
Yes.
So
also the funniest part of the clip to me is the side looks the guitarists and I guess the bass player are all giving because they know that they've been made, but then they were just like, well, the hell with it. Like, we're just going to play the song. So they like really kind of lean into it, but are kind of like looking at each other laughing.
Meanwhile,
the time.
She's like in a fugue state.
She walks off stage. Yeah. She walks off stage. Yeah. Who saw this live?
We saw this live.
You saw this.
Yeah.
Pedro saw it live. Yo, Pedro, what did you think? Were you stressed?
He was mortified for her.
He was mortified.
Pedro was mortified.
I have to imagine.
For her or by her?
For her.
Oh, that's okay. That's
on her behalf.
Here's the thing. Pedro is humane. A lot of you listeners are not humane.
Rob Harvilla, guest on the last podcast, who hates watching people get embarrassed on national television. We'll have to call him and see how he reacted to this.
He's probably still wounded by
it. He was probably fetal.
So then afterwards, it becomes Zapruder-like, right? This becomes the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah.
You don't know if maybe she was lip-syncing the whole performances. Maybe she had backing track that she was singing to, which is very common for pop singers, especially on television.
It sort of depends.
She said she had acid reflux.
Well, I was going to say, within 3 days.
It depends how high it's mixed. Like, I mean, this, and just to clarify as far as backing vocals, Saturday Night Live performances are designed to be live. But plenty of performers use backing vocals. And I think what it comes down to, and this is true in live concerts as well and other types of televised performances, is your backing vocal 90% of the total thing or is it 30% of the total
thing? Well, I think back then.
In and out, that's.
I think the conversation was more limited back then. Like, I think it was more of a quote unquote shock. This is, pre auto tune, pre garage band. Yeah, pre YouTube.
Like, we gotcha.
Pre Twitter. Can you imagine what this would have looked like on Twitter?
I'll also say that this was a moment where, obviously pop music was huge and we come out of a really rich moment, and two of the music critics that I'm sitting with at this table were covering this music seriously even at the time, but it was still a bit of a raucist moment, right?
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Everyone was ready to take the bat to Ashley Simpson's shins after this happened and say, this is why we don't like these prefab pop singers, that, you know,
they're
she's
fake.
Not a real musician, et cetera, et cetera.
Are you suggesting that Margot Robbie might be coming for this? Might be a biopic?
Yeah, the Ashley Simpson biopic?
I'm just saying. It could happen.
That's some good casting.
I wasn't making an I, Tonya reference, but I'm here for it. So do you remember this? I mean, you guys were professionals at the time. Was this, did this?
dubiously, but yes.
I had just been promoted to associate editor of Spin Magazine. I was very excited. Thank you.
Where were you, John?
2004, I was full-time freelance.
Okay.
So I was sitting at my desk in my house, surrounded by 15,000 CDs.
Right. But did this end, her career? Like, what was the fallout?
So I think you're right that people were ready to undermine her or to find a way to undermine her. And this was in an era where we still undermined people. In 2018, if that happened, it would somehow be woven into, it would just be a meme.
It would be LOL, nothing matters.
Yeah, it would just be like, it would just be a meme. It'd be like, what else?
Mariah, New Year's Eve.
Yes.
Was probably the closest.
I think the moral equivalent is like Fergie's national anthem in recent times, where it's like, yes, people are upset about it, but it's also like, it's
are
great
they?
Conversation.
Yeah.
So I think, basically, the acceptance of the hyperreal in pop was not that advanced in 2004 or 2005. And so Ashley Simpson still looked like she was breaking a rule. Whereas I think if that same thing had happened 5 to 10 years later, people would have said either there are no rules or this is a different kind of performance, or they would have found some kind of meta conversation to have about it, because that was how people consumed pop 5 to 10 years later.
I think,
but in 2004, that is not how people consumed
pop. But I also
pop.
Think part of it had to do with the kind of pop artist she was, like as we spent a lot of time talking about. She was a pop artist in front of a band. Those were guys with guitars and basses and a drum set. Yeah, she wasn't supposed to be, you know, dancing to electropop.
Right. She wasn't Britney. She was something else.
Right. She was supposed to be, I mean, ostensibly she and Avril and all of them were like the lead singers of bands.
Right. Which is a dubious premise, but it's true that there were people like to prove that they're smarter than the corporations trying to get one
over.
Well,
yeah. And you can't discount sexism, obviously. Yes. Who wouldn't want to be, you know, punch out the woman fronting the band? She's such a fraud anyway.
There's
in
also
her
nepotism
punk shirt.
Involved. She's the sister of
a pop star.
She's on a reality show.
Yeah. She had a lot of things stacked against her.
Also, and just to bring up to go back to the band idea, we are at this point, late 2004, 18 months out from early Paramore. And so it's not that this idea had no currency or validity or couldn't have been delivered in a way that I think we all would have, even like the skeptics would have appreciated. Like I'm thinking of a Paramore show I reviewed in 06, and in a slightly Funhouse Mirror universe, that's Ashley Simpson.
Well, did the Ashley Simpson podcast idea come out of a Paramore conversation? I think it might have.
This was going to take a lot of surgery to get back and figure out.
But CSI. I think that. You know, the parallels there between what Paramore's sort of big run for the next few years were, you know, the seeds of that, I think, do come from Ashley Simpson and the lineage that we discussed that came before.
And also the bands that Ashley Simpson was either listening to or romantically involved with or whatnot, those are bands that help set the template for bands, for Paramore and bands of that generation.
Yeah. So, and frankly, it was sort of the last time that bands were pop acts.
What's a band?
Yeah.
Should we talk about I Am Me while we're sort of in this moment about how bands and guitars are important?
Are we going to move on to the second record?
I think we are.
Transition?
So this album obviously was commercially successful, but her artistic credibility, such as it existed, took a hit here. So how did she bounce back, Karen? Because I have to say, I pretty much stopped paying attention.
Well, I can't.
Was that your raucous era? Yeah, your raucous phase?
Yeah, I mean, I was, you know, finishing high school and going to college. I wasn't engaging with as much Ashley Simpson post the first album.
Well, she returned to the exact same team that made that first record. So
Cara
DioGuardi, Drink, John Shanks is back. And they did not tweak the sound at all.
Maybe a little harder.
So what was the first single from that album?
She comes out hard with Boyfriend.
Should we listen to that?
Let's
do it.
What you been doing? What you been doing? Whoa, whoa, I haven't seen you around. How you been feeling? How you been feeling? Whoa, whoa, don't you bring me down. All that stuff about me being with him. Can't believe all the lies that you told. Just to ease your own soul. But I'm bigger than that. No, you don't have my back. No. Well, I'm sorry that he called me and that I answered the telephone. Don't be worried, I'm not with him. And when I go out tonight, I'm going home alone. Just got back from my door, I'm a mess, girl, for sure. All I want is some fun. Guess that I better run. Hollywood sucks you in, but it won't spit me out.
Like a Clash record.
It is. I would say that by the time we get to the third album, which I know we're not there yet, Ashley has morphed into sort of like a Gwen Stefani light aesthetic. And don't forget that before Gwen became Pop Gwen, she was obsessed with all of these punk and ska bands. And yeah, that's, I mean, what
Gwen
early
comes
No
from
Doubt
No Doubt,
like.
No Doubt, yeah, is basically a pop distillation of kind of like excellent rhythmic ska and punk of the 80s.
Yes. So Boyfriend, I think that's fair. Boyfriend is sort of like a distillation of that. Mm-hmm. And she's singing about a girl who's claiming that she stole her boyfriend. Now, I don't remember in the tabloid world which woman she was mad about.
I don't know.
Do we know?
Are we in Cabrera era?
Is she still with Cabrera here?
I think she's still dating Ryan Cabrera.
You know who it is?
Whodatedwho.com says?
Wilmer Valderrama.
That's right.
And Lindsay Lohan.
That's right.
Yo.
Oh, my God.
She has denied rumors that the song references her alleged relationship with
Wilmer
Valderrama.
Profile.
You know, honestly, I don't know. I don't know what if Wilmer was all above board during this
I forgot
era.
That he was involved so early.
What was going on there?
I want a play-by-play. I want the emails. I want the texts.
I want Demi Lovato to come here and just have a therapy
Speak
session.
Speak on it.
Yeah, just go.
Demi Lovato. Ashley says, quote, "It's not about one person in particular," which is always the yes, it's about that person that you think it's about. So this is a song directed at Lindsay Lohan, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, we're edging towards like absolute peak Us Weekly period.
Yeah, it's such a great time.
Yeah.
I really miss subscribing to Us Weekly in that era because it was like it wasn't peak TMZ internet gossip. Like every week literally was fresh hell.
Yeah.
You never knew what was going to, I mean, you knew, but you didn't know. It made, before Us Weekly sort of like veers off into like Reality Stars and like Chip and Joanna from Fixer Upper.
And Johnny K plus 8. That was a turning point.
Right. But
2009,
before that,
10, yeah.
This sort of like 1.0 reality era Us Weekly is so good because everybody is making themselves more available.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody
all
is
on the phone.
There's so much
constantly.
Dirt being dished. It's so ugly. It's those covers are so bright and clean, and the insides, the guts are so cancerous. Oh, man. Will someone please buy me a complete edition of 2004 to 2007 Us Weekly for my birthday?
That's a beautiful
thing. I used to have them.
Janice Min has to have them in her personal collection.
Seriously, can someone just either or like PDF me or something? Yeah. I just want them for the archive.
God, this was a good time.
Cara Monica Library needs that.
So Boyfriend, it turns out, is not a huge smash, but her second biggest hit after Pieces of Me.
I think it's a catchy song. I mean, I'm into it, guys.
It's a good song.
Yeah.
Although I did, in the notes that I was taking for myself as I was re-listening to all these albums, my only note for Boyfriend is Ashley a bad singer?
At this point, you started asking that question.
I forgave a lot on the first album because those records are bangers.
And in the quote-unquote imperfections really add character.
Yeah, and to be honest, if she's playing a role of like a young woman coming into her own and basically like learning along the way, an imperfect singing approach is fine. But like when I'm listening to the songs I Am Me and Boyfriend being the first one, I was like, oh, at this point, you can't be the ingenue anymore. You have to be the star. And then if this is how the star sings, actually, maybe there's a flaw here.
I mean, I honestly felt like on both of these records that engineers were tricking her into like making ridiculous noises and trying to convince her that it sounded good.
And then piecing it all together.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking of a
this
moment.
This is like the making of the – do you guys read the Fader making of the Farrah Abraham record? It's like that. It's like wow. That guy.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, I'm thinking specifically of a moment from Love Me For Me from the first record where she literally just goes, ah, and then like, that's in the song. Wow. Who told you to make that noise on a microphone?
She's squealing a lot. She's definitely squealing.
I mean, can you just imagine? No, we need to do it again. Again, again. I mean, like, you know what vocal takes look like. It's absolutely brutal.
So what else do we hear on this album?
Well, we have to listen to L.O.V.E., which is the second single.
Yeah,
which
and this is Stefanikor.
This is a pretty well-known song.
And this is Stefanikor.
Yeah.
All my girls stand in a circle and clap your hands, this is for you. Ups and downs, highs and lows, and no matter what, you see me through. My boyfriend, he don't answer on the telephone. I don't even know where the hell he goes, but my girls, we're in a circle and nobody's gonna break through.
To me, this song is the solution to the Ashley Simpson not singing well problem by basically chopping her syllables into small pieces.
Into letters.
Yeah, yeah.
Spell it out.
Into smaller units.
You basically don't have to absolutely small units. But you basically, you kind of remove her from the need to carry a strong melody. And I think L.O.V. is a fun song. It's not my favorite song of hers, but I think it's a fun song.
I think this is also back to Stefanikor. It definitely kind of has like a faux swinging reggae kind of thing going on.
Yeah. Yeah. I not sure about this one.
Everybody's just looking at me suspiciously right now, but yeah. I'm going to tell you that there's a couple of really other good songs
on
this album.
I want to hear the Gans take. I also want to hear your take on the music on this record. Because I think to me, this record is a fuller sounding album. But I think in doing that, it really underscores what she's not bringing to the table.
Well, I think this is the record where they are edging dangerously towards her sister's kind of a vocal sound in that they're asking her to sing. Because like In Another Life and Beautifully Broken, these are songs that are actually kind of like edging towards ballads where they have more melody. I Am Me, she kind of just bashed the, which is a great song.
That's
we're
going
to have to listen to this. But this is one of those songs where she really does her patented tone pitch drop.
Yes. So let's listen to I Am Me.
Okay.
What she got that I don't have? Does she fill those spaces that I left you? When you wake up every night, does the scent of regret ever haunt you?
IME, I'm really interested in it from a narrative perspective. This is IME. She keeps saying, I won't change for anyone.
And you do remember what happened right when she released this album.
No, speak on it.
I remember what happened when she released this album, which is that she appeared on a magazine cover with a new nose.
After
proclaiming, I am me, I won't change.
Allegedly. We don't have a website for that, so we don't know.
Reminds me of a story of a friend who's a manager who will remain unnamed, who was speaking to an indie rock band who also will remain unnamed. The first thing he said to the lead singer was, are you married to that nose?
Wow. Welcome to the music industry.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Ashley, who, you know, was always preaching, you know, self-esteem, mm-hmm. believing in yourself, whatever. I did not evidently believe in her original God-given nose.
You know, personal autonomy, she's ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
Ahead of the curve.
In 2017, 18, that's just a meme.
Although nose jobs are out of fashion right now.
Right, but filters are not.
That's true. Like they come on our phones now. Yeah, the nose job is in the
screen.
She
basically was just doing Snapchat filters before Snapchat. Why are we driven?
I am me. I won't change for anyone. It's the lyric on the song.
Okay, it's a little rich. It's a little rich.
Yes.
But a thing that comes up a lot in Ashley Simpson songs, and again, they're Cardi or Guardi songs, drink. But a thing that comes up a lot in these songs is this existential sense of being stuck.
Yes.
Of being oppressed upon by expectation, whether it's of a partner, a romantic partner, of family, of society, and feeling stuck and lashing back. Now, obviously, Ashley Simpson is not the first rebel or faux rebel to embrace these themes, but I was consistently struck on these records how, to me, the best and most vibrant songs were the ones where she genuinely seems to identify as this put-upon figure. And I Am Me is one of those songs.
I agree with that. Also, Beautifully Broken.
Oh! Pure banger.
Yeah.
Pure banger, but not in the same style as a lot of the other
songs. No, it's more of a ballad.
Yeah, and this is, and also, I'm pretty sure Ashley Simpson ends all her albums with slow songs, like reflective slow songs.
Yeah,
this is not at the end of the album, but just something that I noticed.
This is track three, following another banger in Another Life.
Let's listen to Beautifully Broken.
Okay.
Get a Kleenex, because it'll take you there.
Yesterday that my world fell from the sky. It seems like yesterday I didn't know how hard I could cry. It feels like tomorrow I may not get by, but I will try, I will try. Why the tears from my
So that's Beautifully Broken, a.k.a. Pieces of Me Chopped and Screwed Remixed. It's 25% slower, roughly, than Pieces of Me. And I firmly believe it's just pitch shifted from the original instrumental.
But works nonetheless.
Yeah.
But it's lyrically the inverse, because in Pieces of Me, you know, he's completing her. He understands all the pieces of her. And in Beautifully Broken, she's in pieces.
Just pieces.
Mm. Yes.
Pieces only.
Mm.
This is some deep readings.
Complete.
Yeah.
Okay, so these are the two essential records, right? Autobiography 2004, I Am Me 2005. Let's just quickly say which you prefer of the two and why.
I do prefer Autobiography, but there are like three songs on I Am Me that are outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
But I Am Me does sort of flag a little bit. I had it on all weekend as I was walking around. At a certain point, I was like, I want to turn this off.
Yeah.
Just coming back to Autobiography for a second, listening to it and the amount of hits it has and the way it sort of moves weirdly and the sound a bit. We talked a lot about female musicians in the first part, but also reminds me of Third Eye Blind albums from this time.
I'm really out here on the ledge.
Jumper,
yep.
My
you might
God.
Call me.
Oh my God.
But Anyway,
I'm just see the look in my eyes. Yeah.
I just you know the emotion, the mix of acoustic guitars and electric guitars, the amount of pure hits. It's very similar to the Third Eye Blind self-titled album.
I just want to say right now we are not doing a Third Eye Blind podcast. I refuse.
I'm not asking.
No,
not
for it. I refuse unless I go on vacation for like 2 months. In which case, have at it.
I'm not asking for that. I'm just saying there's something.
I don't think you're wrong, but I'm scared.
I'm not even. I'm gonna pretend.
So you know which of these albums
I'm
I
pretending.
Like more.
I'm pretending you didn't say that. Yeah, I mean, Autobiography is definitely the better of the two. I mean, I Am Me is very much like the Monkey version of Autobiography.
Right.
And the fact that it was made in 12 months. You know, not that Autobiography was like 6 years in the making, but like the fact that it was made so quickly in the sort of like tailwinds of the first album to kind of capitalize on the moment and the sound. However, by 2005 and then 2006, things are starting to change already in the bigger pop conversation.
Rock is dead, would you say?
Well, it's an interesting moment, right? So
I you know, we completely ignored the fact that sort of simultaneous to this, rock was alive with the Strokes and the AAS and that, you know, these things were happening on such an unbelievably different planet.
Right.
It was like actually hard to believe these things were happening.
So, and also was on TRL probably around the same time that Ashley Simpson was.
That's true.
And also Warped Tour was like good at this time. Like, you know, if you weren't into like the cool rock, like I think like Dumb Rock was kind of good at this time. Your man Derek Whibley out here caking.
Yeah.
Just really living.
Yeah.
So a lot of good things. Blink 182 happening.
I will say briefly that something that sticks out in watching the reality show is that the soundtrack was a lot higher budget. If you watch something like Siesta Key nowadays, you're gonna get a lot of low level would be pop music, right. And then maybe a big song every now and then. The Ashley Simpson show is
hits.
Full of
I
hits.
I heard
and there's
Flaming Lips. I heard Beck.
But there's also montage of her and Ryan Cabrera the first time they make out, which is in his music video. Again, we'll go into this more in part two, but it's set to both Your Body is a Wonderland and First Date by Blink 182. Just sit with that for a second.
Take that in.
I know, wow.
That's erotic. So we've come off peak Ashley Simpson, but Ashley Simpson is not gone. And speaking a little bit in sort of the how did pop change from Ashley Simpson's first album to Ashley Simpson's third album, a thing that you started to see in 06 and 07, and something that seems actually quite strange right now in the rear view, is a lot of mainstream hip-hop producers started working in pop. And at the time, it felt radical to have Pharrell doing pop records, to have Pharrell doing Gwen Stefani records, to have Timbaland doing pop records. And the third Ashley Simpson album, and just as a quick sidebar, just for everybody who wants to know what's happening today in 2018, if Migos is going to number one on the Billboard chart, whoever produces those records doesn't need to make pop records. But this was still a time when rap records were not going to the top of the Billboard charts. So a lot of these producers who were making hundreds of thousands of dollars for a song understood there was tremendous money to be made by working with pop singers.
By crossing over.
And there were pop singers who understood there was tremendous credibility to be gained by working with hip-hop producers. So anyway, that brings us to the third Ashley Simpson record, which is Bittersweet World, which is basically produced by Timbaland and Jim
Beans. The Neptunes.
And yes. So it's a very, very different record. Let's listen to Out of My Head, Ashley Simpson.
Not written by Cara DeGuardi.
Not written by Cara, no, post Cara. No drink.
Somebody who has a songwriting credit on this song is Santigold.
Don't you mean Santogold?
I know. This was before Santi had to change her name, spelling of her name. I reviewed this album for Rolling Stone in 2008. I had just gotten to Rolling Stone, and I absolutely insisted that this album had to be reviewed.
Rightly so.
Somehow people, they listen to me. Unfortunately, it's no longer on their website, and on the Wayback Machine, I can't tell what my star rating is. I'm going to guess it was a 3.
It was definitely a 3.
Okay.
I can say with one fact, as a person who's written like 600 Rolling Stone reviews, I can say with absolute certainty
it was
a 3.
You're probably right. It was 3 stars. I was disappointed because I wanted it to be 4-star record. But
shouts to every Rolling Stone review I filed a 4 or 3.5 that ran as a 3.
Don't give away the industry secrets.
Just any artist out there wondering what your real rating was, you can email me.
It was not 3.
It was not 3.
this really was just like, how Gwen Stefani could she possibly get?
Yep.
And Santi obviously was a good choice to move in that direction. I'm trying to remember the connection. Was Santi working with, I mean, there are a lot of people on this record.
Yeah, I think she was sort of, this is the beginning of her next to blow phase. So she was probably in a lot of important rooms around this time.
Yeah.
A lot of big sessions. Weirdly,
although the important room is, can you save Ashley Simpson's career?
Right.
That's the important room.
And also, weirdly, Ashley Simpson had just come off being in Chicago
doing
musical
Broadway.
Theater.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
So she was really, I'm going to say, flailing at the time.
You can
or
say
thriving. I don't know. See, this is, and here's the thing. Listening to this record, this album, made me think of two people. It made me think of Miley Cyrus.
Yes.
And it made me think of Taylor Swift.
Less so.
Say more.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Miley Cyrus has made an entire career of basically being chameleonic and moving in and out of various pop frameworks and ideas. Country, hip hop, pure pop, Flaming Lips, weirdo rock, whatever. They're not all successful. Miley Cyrus is basically understood to be a fluid enough figure to convincingly sell any of those styles. At least that's the sales pitch. I don't know if we all buy it as listeners and critics, but it's the sales pitch.
I'll say that I buy it as her personality as well.
Yes,
having spent some time with her, I believe that's true
about
to
deep
her
cuts.
In some
deep,
way.
That's the Coscarelli deep cuts, the behind this, the BTS from the Miley Cyrus video. Oh,
if you see me at a bar, ask me to see my photos of Miley's pig.
True story.
But also, Miley has the pipes. Like, she's a really good singer and a pretty fluid songwriter.
But I'm just saying that idea is an operative idea that wasn't that far. I mean, the early Hannah Montana stuff's not that much after this time period.
Totally.
And then I think of Taylor Swift. And Taylor makes a very hard pivot into contemporary pop and hip-hop sounding R&B pop or whatever in this most recent level. But Taylor is not convincing. The album I find very good, but people don't want that from Taylor Swift. And I was struck that this Ashley Simpson record, this third album, I think if it was under some, if it was a Nelly Furtado record, maybe people would have reacted differently to it. If it was a Miley Cyrus record, people would have reacted differently to it. But I do think that by this point, Ashley Simpson's public brand was fixed. And even though her career might have been washed by purists, I do think there was an idea of what Ashley Simpson did. And nothing, well, not nothing, but very little on this record does what Ashley Simpson did. One song I want to listen to, which I think does do what Ashley Simpson did, is called Rule Breaker. Breaker is pretty reckless version 0.0. And this is why when I say like Paramore is coming and then eventually bands like this will come, I think Ashley Simpson, the good parts of this album are anticipating that, or at least the successful parts of this album. Because I think there are other songs that are good songs except for the fact that Ashley Simpson is on them.
Well, then I'm going to have to listen to my favorite song on the record, which is called What I Become, which is sort of an interesting coming of age song. But it's a really, really well written song. It could have really been by
anyone. And you want to hear the note I have on What I've Become on my thing?
Oh, no.
These are some real, and then in all caps, chainsaw guitars.
Ganscore.
With a super hyper melodic chorus. What are you saying? You can't read it.
Gans Wave.
Yeah, this song is amazing. And it really has just like, it resolves perfectly. Let's listen to some
Gans Wave.
So Bittersweet World sort of came and went a little bit.
If you want to talk about the chart position just extremely quickly, it opened at number 4, but apparently with 47,000 copies, which was a pretty...
You mean the number one record in 2018.
Yeah, I know. Things are very different 10 years ago.
Yeah, the music industry is declining. Ashley Simpson is declining. Jessica Simpson is long gone from the pop charts and presumably plotting her world takeover with affordable shoes. And then, you know,
Jessica Simpson espadrilles. I'm going to buy you guys that for the holidays. Vintage Jessica Simpson espadrilles.
Soon Ashley has a child with Pete Wentz. Pete Wentz.
Bronx Mowgli.
And then...
Pete Wentz, email the pod. Email us.
And then she's gone. Yeah. And then she's gone.
Just gone.
And yet not. So as we're closing out today... You know, when I was going through Spotify, I tried my best to listen to everything that I could on Ashley Simpson, and I stumbled on what can only be described as an Ashley Simpson Lucy, and it's from 2012, and it is called Bat for a Heart. And I think if you listen, I don't want to say Ashley invented sad girl pop of the mid-2010s. I don't want to say that, but I just want to say Ashley was there. That is part one of the Ashley Simpson podcast. Thank you for participating. Thank you for playing along. Thank you for your curiosity and your engagement. We will be back next week with a more intense distillation of the Ashley Simpson show and also listener mailbag. So if you have unresolved issues about our conversation this week, email us, podcast@nytimes.com. You can listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. By all means, email us about Ashley Simpson or anyone else you think we should do a special episode of the podcast on. If you have ideas for unsung short-term celebrity couples that are actually super influential, I'd like to hear them. podcast@nytimes.com. Subscribe to the pod, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, anywhere you get your audio content. Our diligent producer is Pedro Rosado from Head Stepper Media. He was there.
He's listened to a lot of Ashley Simpson today.
He was there. Check us out next week.
Cara DiGuardi.